Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I'm joined by a very special guest today. It's Dr. Judy Morgan. Hi, Dr. Judy.
Hello, thank you for the invitation.
You're quite welcome. Dr. Judy Morgan has over 40 years experience as an integrative veterinarian, acupuncturist, chiropractor, food therapist, best-selling author, international speaker, podcast host, and is the owner of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets. Her goal is to change the lives of pets by educating and empowering pet parents worldwide in the use of natural healing therapies and minimizing the use of chemicals, vaccinations, and poor quality processed foods. Dr. Judy has published best-selling books, including her most recent Yin and Yang 2.0 Nutrition for Dogs, Maximizing Health with Whole Foods. Wow, Dr. Judy, thanks so much for being so amazing for all of us, just to begin with, by contributing so much to the pet parent community. It's such an honor and a privilege to have you here with me today. Okay, so my first question really is, did you always want to be an integrative veterinarian, or was it something that happened once you'd kind of done a few years in conventional practice?
I had no idea what an integrated or holistic veterinarian was. So I practiced traditional medicine for 10 years. And then I accidentally took a chiropractic course because it was called something else. I didn't know that I was going to be studying chiropractic. I figured it out after being in the first lecture for a couple of hours. And since I'd paid for it, I thought, well, I'll stick it out. And when I started using it, the changes were so drastic that I said, oh my gosh, it was sort of like somebody opened up this door to Wonderland. And I said, well, if this works this well, what else is out there? And so that just started my journey of studying everything I could, including, and then once I started, you know, words started getting out that I was doing chiropractic, and then I started doing acupuncture. Clients would come in and they would tell me about other things that they were doing, like raindrop therapy and light therapy and essential oils and sound and tuning forks and all these things. So it just was like this bombardment of all these possibilities. So I just started dabbling in everything until I really settled on what resonated with me.
Wow. That's, I mean, how do you even find the time to do all of that? Like, that's just sheer determination. Okay, so.
Well, at the time, I only owned one practice. So, my kids were sort of like teenager, preteens. So they didn't require quite as much. But I also, at the time, had a horse boarding and training facility. I had about 100 lesson students a week in addition to my clinic. So yeah, there was a lot going on.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's dedication, isn't it? I think if you're truly passionate though, it you do kind of just find the time, don't you? And it doesn't seem like it's that much of a push.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to break things down in chunks, and it's like, what am I doing in the next hour? And I'm still that way. Like the day before, I open my phone calendar and I go, okay, what's on the agenda for tomorrow, and what other things can I sneak in between what's already there? So it's really, I'm kind of a last minute person, unfortunately. luckily somebody else runs my calendar, and I literally just look at it and go, where am I supposed to be now?
Well, that's definitely working for you though, isn't it? So you can't complain.
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, I wanted to chat with you today about the ongoing problem that we have with the chemical flea, tick and worming treatments in the pet space. So now, you have been a true advocate for many, many years against the general use and overuse of these kinds of medications, haven't you? And as with many medications in today's age, it's common that pet parents just kind of like give these to their dogs and cats without any real thought about what they do or how they work or basically what they are. So firstly, could you begin by explaining for us what these kinds of medications actually are in terms of the substances they are made from and how they work in our dogs' bodies to kind of, you know, protect them from parasites?
So we have had many changes in parasite prevention in the past 40 years since I've been a veterinarian. So we started out way back when we had daily heartburn preventative and we had flea collars. And interestingly, when I was a small child, my dad worked for Sargent's Pet Products, which was under the Chapstick umbrella. And he used to sell flea collars and flea chemicals, and their biggest competitor was Hart's Mountain. So I, even as a small child, we knew all about the chemical use on dogs and cats. And then when I went through vet school, we were using products called organophosphates, which are really good at killing fleas and ticks, but they're also really good at killing people, dogs, and animals, and cats. So not so good. Interestingly, I had a, before I was into anything holistic, I worked in a traditional practice as well as emergency medicine. And my last client of the day at the traditional practice was a dog that was completely flea infested. And so I left there and went to do my overnight shift at the emergency and I had fleas in my hair. And wow. I was going nuts. So I truly understand what these animals go through when they have a flea infestation. I was miserable. So as soon as I got to the emergency service, I grabbed a bottle of the organophosphate shampoo, jumped in the shower and washed my hair with the organophosphate shampoo. So never let it be said that I'm not willing to use something on myself. I'm going to use on the animals. But that stuff is so, so, so toxic. The only good thing about it is that there is an antidote for it if an animal has a reaction to it. So fast forward, now we have all these bigger, supposedly better chemicals. Isoxazolines are one of the major categories that came out in 2014. So that's Credelio, Simparica, NexGard, Bravecto. And these were going to be the new be-all, end-all. Before that, we had Fipronil, which is Frontline, and a ton of other names for those. And then we have others, Advantage, we have Moxidectin, which is another just deadly one. The biggest problem with these chemicals is that they're neurotoxins. So they affect nerve transmission and they affect the nervous system. So the brain, the spinal cord, the nerves. And they're only supposed to affect the nervous system of fleas and ticks. Unfortunately, some dogs and cats are really, really, really sensitive to these chemicals and they act as neurotoxins on the dogs and cats as well. So we have so many animals that have seizures, tremors, sudden death. These drugs, the isoxazolines, were also studied in humans as anticoagulants, so to stop clotting. So we have some animals that will develop horrendous, horrendous bloody vomiting and diarrhea. We have others that just bleed out internally. And so they're, you know, sudden death. The owner's like, well, I gave them the Bravecto or the NexGard yesterday and they're dead today. And they've got an abdomen or chest full of blood. How can that happen? So, you know, the biggest problem is that the drug companies and the traditional veterinarians say, oh, it's such a small percentage. Well, the problem is that they skew the studies. So I just did a rant about this recorded last week because there was a study that came out of Europe and I believe it was like Denmark and the Netherlands. It was a couple Scandinavian countries and they did a review. They did a, you know, looking back at how many reports of serious adverse events had occurred in, I think it was a dog study, over the past 10 years. And they came up with only 77. And I'm like, how do you come up with 77 when the EMA and the FDA literally have hundreds of thousands of complaints? Their problem is they limited it to serious adverse events that occurred within 12 to 24 hours of the drug being given. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is these drugs last 1 to 3 months or longer, and some animals don't react within the first 24 hours. They might start having their seizures 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. They might start having it after the third dose, maybe not on the first dose. And so by skewing how you study these things and saying, oh, it only counts if it happened within 12 hours. that's bogus. Like, mm-hmm. you can do a scientific study any way you want if you know what your endpoint result is. So there's a new drug on the market that I was looking at the other day, and I looked at the drug insert, and 1/3 of the test subject dogs in their initial research died. And wow. they basically excluded them. They were like, oh, well, this one died from this, this one died from this. It didn't have anything to do with the drug. Well, how do you know? And how do you get this drug approved when 1/3 of the test subjects died in the 3-month study?
We'll
just tweak this however we want to, and you can always find somebody for enough money who's willing to change what gets reported. So it makes me crazy. It also gets me lots of haters who, you know, say, oh no, we use these drugs all the time in our practice and they're absolutely fine. Okay.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah, I know. It's tough, isn't it? Because, and I think one of the problems we've got as well about even raising awareness of the problems is like just the lack of understanding of how toxic they are. And mm-hmm. I mean, the FDA have got so many, like hundreds of thousands of complaints, but it is, you know, it's largely estimated that most of the side effects go unreported because, you know, either pet parents don't connect it with being with the drug or kind of don't know that they should report it or stuff like that. So you just explained that symptoms can, obviously, they don't have to happen immediately, and they can sort of happen at any point up until, would you say it's right. exclusively like 3 months, or is it different for every drug?
it's different for every drug and for every animal. And unfortunately, the veterinarians don't connect the dots. So my office manager, when I had my practice, was big into beagle rescue. So this beagle was turned into rescue because it was having seizures that they just weren't really able to control, even with medication, and the owners were just done with it. So she gets the dog and brings me the medical records, and she says, okay, we got to figure out what's going on with this dog, make up a protocol for me to treat. What are we going to do? And I get the records, and this owner was a very, very good client, and they followed their veterinarian's recommendations religiously. And so I look at the records, and on the first of every single month, the owner came in to pick up a dose of NexGard and a 30-day prescription of anti-seizure medication. Ugh. And so this is a veterinarian who isn't even figuring out that, gee, NexGard causes seizures. Maybe we should stop the drug.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the receptionist or the, you know, the front desk person was just handing this stuff out every month, but prescriptions have to be approved by the veterinarian. Mm-hmm. Why did they? And so I see this, I get records sent to me all the time, and I look at them and I'm like, how are we not connecting this dot with this dot? It's like, the dog has seizures. We shouldn't be using a seizure-causing neurotoxin.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, like, it is really estimated that only 1% of adverse reactions get reported. And the other problem, so I have one family, they had 3 dogs. They all went to a vaccine clinic. They were given 5 different vaccines, which means, you know, 5 different injections, which means probably 15 different vaccines within those.
All at once.
And we're also, each dog was fed a dose of Bravecto. Oh, so within a week, we've got 3 seizuring dogs.
Yeah.
So they come to me for, okay, we need something to fix this. And so I reported it, and we had to report it to the manufacturers of all the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And we had to report it to the manufacturer of Bravecto. Well, the folks that manufactured Bravecto said, oh no, it didn't cause the seizures. It was all the vaccines. The vaccine companies go, oh no, they didn't cause the reaction. Bravecto caused it. So nobody took responsibility. So this is how it's so easy for the company to go, oh yeah, no, we've only had 2 reports, not 200,000, because they just push the responsibility off somewhere else. And so this is one of those reasons that we say, look, don't go get 5 vaccines at one time. First of all, that's really unfair to your pet's immune system. But second, if they react, how do you know which one? How do you know which one to take out of their protocol and never use again? And if you give them a neurotoxin on the same day that you do a million vaccines, again, nobody's going to take responsibility, and you don't even know which thing you're supposed to be treating.
Yeah.
So it's a mess.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's shocking, but it's that whole concept again that the well, I'm going to say market, because it is a market, isn't it? This whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's saturated with these products. So they're just everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely everywhere. And one of the problems that I frequently run into, because, you know, I don't use them on my dogs. I've got Boston Terriers, and one of my Boston Terriers is epileptic. And it wasn't until years after that I looked back at his life, basically, when I started learning about everything, that I noticed that his first seizure was like after he'd had four doses of one of these products. And but nobody pointed it out to me at this point. And it just, you know, it kind of just all falls into place. But pet parents are literally petrified to stop using them at like every month or every 3 months. And it's they're literally scared to death. And
they are. And the scare tactics are, that's what's used to sell the products.
Yeah.
You know, oh my gosh, fleas might carry tapeworms. Okay, great. You know, my dog gets a flea, my dog gets a tapeworm. Okay, then I'll give them something for the tapeworms. That doesn't mean I have to give them a tapeworm dewormer every month. It doesn't mean I have to give them a flea product every month. So years ago, my mom said, I need you to bring home she was using Frontline at the time. I need more Frontline and more heartworm preventative for my dog. Can you get some from the clinic? I'm like, yes. And so this was when I was early into getting more holistic and getting away from the chemicals. And I said, Mom, why do you put the flea and tick product on every month? Like, have you ever seen a tick on your dog? And she said, no, and I don't want to. And I went, oh my gosh, light bulb moment. She thinks this repels fleas and ticks, and that's why she never sees fleas and ticks. I'm like, it doesn't repel, Mom. It only kills them after they get on. If you've never had a flea or tick, it means that your dog does not live in an area where there are fleas. And she didn't. She lived in a mowed, fenced yard with no exposure to anything.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my light bulb moment of, oh my gosh, I need to educate people that these don't repel. And particularly with the isoxazolines, the fleas and ticks have to bite the animal and get a blood meal with that chemical. So it's not going to prevent Lyme disease, babesiosis, anaplasma, ehrlichia. Your dog has to, or cat has to, get bitten in order for that tick to die. So, you know, it's still a problem. And this, it became really an eye-opener for me when we really started studying Lyme disease, when the first Lyme vaccine came out. And so that was when they also came out with the in-office Lyme snap test. So when everybody comes in every year for their heartworm test, it's like, okay, now we're also running these Lyme snap tests. And people got so mad at me because their dog's Lyme test would come back positive. And they're like, I've been putting Frontline on every month for my dog's entire life. You can see it right there in the records. And I'm like, yeah, you've been coming in, you've been getting it every month. Like, and so that was sort of the tick still has to bite your dog. And so your dog is still getting Lyme, or at least getting exposed to it. They didn't all have active infection, but they, almost all of them had Lyme antibodies in their system. And so that was sort of the, okay, well, then using these products is not keeping our dogs from getting tick-borne diseases. And that's the scare tactic that's used. Oh, you don't want them to get Lyme disease. Oh my gosh. Well, it's nothing going to prevent it.
When you talk about it like that, it's almost comical, isn't it? Like that, you know, like it's so hard to believe, you know, what's going on, because this is, it's, everybody's just kind of just smokescreened about everything, which I'm laughing because it's sort of, it's awful.
Well, and you also have to wonder, like, okay, we have clients that have little teeny tiny pocket pets, little teeny tiny dogs that are 3 to 5 pounds. These dogs, the only time they go outside, they're in a purse, and they use pee pads or little, you know, piddle boxes, or they have one little spot in the yard where they put them down. But a lot of them, their feet never touch the ground. Where are they going to get fleas and ticks? Like, this is crazy. And yet I see them getting these chemicals, and the chemicals have a very broad range. Mm-hmm. So if we look at most heartworm preventatives, the smallest dose is 2 to 25 pounds. Now, some of them do 2 to 10 pounds, which is much better. But why? And the upper range is 51 to 100 pounds. Well, why do I want to give my 51 pound dog the same dose that I'm going to give a 100 pound dog?
Yeah.
So we always went down on the dose, but it's very difficult to get veterinarians to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can imagine that it's difficult to get them to kind of let you off the hook without giving it to your pet in most.
Well, it's really interesting what happens. And I hear this very commonly, and I got asked this question on a podcast last week. What happens is people spend a lot of money. Like, they're given that dose of Bravecto, and it's $50 for one dose, and they take it home and throw it away. I'm like, why would you waste $50? Just say no.
Yeah, it's true.
You're in charge. Like, you have the ability to open your mouth and say, I really don't want to use that. I'm going to do something else. I'm not spending $50. You know, even when I don't practice now, and three times in the last month, I've had to take animals in to the vet. And every single time, they've recommended antibiotics for them. None of them had a bacterial infection, but they were recommended to be put on antibiotics. And I'm like, we've got a virus. Why would I use an antibiotic? I am not paying you for antibiotics. And okay, this one, yeah, she's got clear stuff coming out her nose. Nothing thick, nothing yellow, no fever, eating. No, I'm not. And lab work is normal. No, I don't want antibiotics. Well, it might help prevent. Well, antibiotics don't prevent. They treat an infection that's already there. They don't prevent. So, you know, when one person in the family gets sick and needs to take an antibiotic, it doesn't mean you put everybody else in the family on an antibiotic. And so it's really up to, this is why I spend so much time trying to educate people, because it's really up to you to have enough knowledge to be able to say, yeah, I don't want to do that. And here's why, and I'll let you know how that goes for me.
Yeah, it's a confidence thing though, isn't it? Like, I find there's a lot of, because now for some reason, if you want to try and do things sort of like less chemically, or, you know, not even just alternatively in a natural way, if you just say no to the drugs, there's like this massive invisible divide that happens between the two kinds. And you've got the people who are like, you know, you're depriving your pet of this safety and everything like that. And then it's just kind of, it's just weird how it's happened, isn't it? And then pet parents feel like they don't even want to approach the veterinarians anymore, because the conversations become quite awkward, which obviously nobody likes confrontation or anything like that, do they? But
right. Well, and it's really interesting, because I see the surveys and the studies that are out there talking about trust with, you know, different factions. So a lot of people, like the trust in human physicians has gone way down. The trust in veterinarians has gone way down. The trust in government has gone way down. And so I think just across the board, we're all just getting more skeptical of what are you trying to sell me now? But that's good. If we stop questioning, we just become these little robots who, and it's funny, because I look at my parents' generation, and anybody with a white coat, man, the doctor's got the white, which nobody even wears the white coats anymore. But if there's somebody in a white coat telling you this is what you need to do, my parents are like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then I come along and I'm like, wait, what? No, we're out.
Yeah, but again, times have changed dramatically again, haven't they? You know, like what was probably normal practice when they were growing up is, you know, completely different to what it's like now. Completely different.
It's funny. I remember I was probably 10 years old. I was in the car with my grandmother, and I was really, I'm sort of a volcano. Like, I stuff everything down and then I explode. And so I'm in the back seat of the car. I'm like 10 years old, and I exploded about something at school. And my grandmother says, you need to take an aspirin so you can calm down. I'm like, It made me calm down just having her say that, because I'm like, what's an aspirin have to do with calming down? Like, at 10 years old, I was smart enough to know that aspirin had nothing to do with calming down. It's really interesting how through the generations we look at things totally differently.
It is. One thing, so following on from like all the fear tactics in kind of marketing these products to get parents to basically fear for their pet's safety if they don't use them, rather than obviously it's quite the opposite. Obviously there's heartworm and lungworm that tends to be a little bit more serious than like just a tapeworm and stuff. So, you know, what kind of do you even recommend having treatments for those kind of parasites, or, you know, is there a way that pet parents can still support the pets, like naturally or alternatively?
Lungworm is a much bigger problem in Europe than it is here. We don't see much of it here at all. So I haven't had to deal with that very often. As far as heartworm, we have a ton of heartworm disease here, particularly in the Southeast and the Mid-South, where it's hot and humid. And so basically it's about mosquito control, because mosquitoes spread the heartworms. I live in the Southeast. I live in North Carolina. In the summer, it is hot and the humidity is crazy. And I have not had we've lived there since 2021, and I have not had my dogs on heartworm preventative. Prior to that, we were in New Jersey. The summers are hot and humid. Mosquito is the state bird. And I didn't use it there for the last 4 years, because it's using common sense.
Yeah.
So if I'm sitting out on my back patio and the sun is going down and the mosquitoes are starting to come out in droves, well, I'm not going to sit out there, and neither are my dogs. Now, I do happen to have some natural flea and tick essential oil sprays.
Yeah.
So if I do want to stay outside, I just grab my dog's bottle of essential oil flea and tick spray. I spray me, I spray them, and I'm like, okay, we can all stay out here for a while. They're very, very effective. We were at a county fair. We had a tent where we were promoting our vet clinics and the natural products and stuff. And they're little gnats called noceums. You can barely see these things, but they bite like heck, and they're mean. And so all of a sudden we were being, you know, it's evening, the sun's gone down, and we're next to a wooded area. These things came out, we were getting bitten like crazy. And I had a couple of my dogs with me. I was like, this is no fun for anybody, but we had to stay. And so I just grabbed one of the essential oil sprays off of the shelf. And I'm like, well, we're not selling this bottle, because I'm using this. And I did one spritz on my dog. The entire tent cleared out of noceums. And I was like, well, that was pretty awesome. Now, like, everybody wants to be in our tent, because we've got no bugs. So these things are so effective. And that's the pushback we get from the traditional people. Oh, no. That's never going to work. That's not going to, and you know what? They actually repel. So my dog's less likely to get Lyme disease if he gets bitten by a tick, if I'm using something that actually repels the tick instead of only killing it after it attaches. So I've had great success using natural products. In the South, the fleas, with the heat and the humidity in the summer, they're not a problem when we have really dry heat, but with that humid heat, oh my gosh, fleas are like crazy. So we use nematodes in the yard to keep the fleas from developing. My barn cats obviously go a lot further than just my yard, but we use a parasite dust on them, a powder. That's the easiest thing. I can't put collars on them. I can't, you know, spraying my cats, they'd all run the other way. But the powders are easy, because they're natural powders, but I can put it in my hand and pet the cat. Done. It's very simple.
I think sometimes when it's that simple, people struggle to believe that it's true, don't they? Especially when it's sort of like an essential, something as simple as an essential oil or a powder or something like that. But would there be any situations where you would recommend using these products?
Never in my sights, Azaline. Never, ever, ever, ever.
Never, ever. Not even if the pet gets a problem.
Nope. If I had to choose chemicals, there are safer chemicals. So never, never, ever would I use an isoxazoline product. So years ago, we had a house at the shore, and driving from our regular house to the shore house, we had five dogs with us, and the Doberman was desperate to get out of the car and pee. And we were on this backwoods road with high grass along the side, and then it was pine forest. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to get out of the car with this dog. And I get out, and so we're walking through, you know, thigh-high grass. The dog pees, does his thing. We get back in the car. We drive down to the shore. Don't think anything of it. The next weekend when we go down to the shore house, everything in that house was white because that's what you do at the shore. There were ticks crawling up the walls. Like, so when he was in the high grass, that's where the ticks live. So he must have brought a boatload. And so then we were gone all week. And when we come back, I literally have ticks crawling my walls. They're on my sofa. I was just like, oh my God. And I've got five dogs with us. And so I was like, all right, how am I going to get the, like, I don't want to bomb all kinds of chemicals in the house. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. So I just looked at the five dogs and I said, guys, you're it. You're going to get rid of these ticks for me. And so five dogs each got one dose of Frontline, which is fipronil. And ticks were gone because all the ticks were going to go to the dogs. And unfortunately, all the dogs got Lyme disease. So then they all had to be treated for Lyme disease. All this because one dog had to pee on the side of the road. So there's your caution. Stay out of the high grass in a high tick area. So yes, would I use something? And this was many years ago before we had as many, well, before I knew about so many of these natural products. But it would be really hard. You know, when you have an infestation, a tick infestation in your house, they are so hard to kill. So, you know, never say never. You know, now I'm at the point, I know where ticks come from. I know what areas to keep my dogs out of. You know, there are people who hike a lot in the woods, people who have hunting dogs that are going through the fields. You know, they're definitely going to have a different exposure level than what my dogs do right now. Interestingly, when I first got started in holistic care, one of my clients was a pointer breeder and showed her pointers. So they're hunting dogs. And she asked me to speak at the Pointer National Specialty in Ohio. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. I'd love to do this. And so go out to Ohio, do my thing. And I had taken some products with me. And so the dogs, as part of their show career, they do field work. These are working field dogs. So 100 dogs and their owners pack up in the parking lot in the morning and they all go out to do their field work. My client had an essential oil spray that she was using on her dog and herself. Everybody else had all these different chemicals. And at the end of the day, the only one who came in with no ticks was her and her dog. And that evening I sold every bottle of essential oil spray that I had with me because everybody was like, well, we all came in covered and our dogs came in covered. And, you know, my client Nancy's like, ah. <You know? laughs> So, you know, and something like that, it's like, we just converted 100 dog owners like that, you know? And so sometimes that's what it takes. People have to see the evidence. And I mean, that was great evidence that, you know, I love trials like that. It's like, oh, cool.
Especially when they're non-invasive and they're not going to, you know, put any risk to the animal like exactly. The rest of them seem to do. So so without having to use these preventative, obviously, which we've just, you know, we've discovered they're not actually preventative kind of treatments, what are the kinds of things that pet parents can and should be doing with their dogs in order to kind of actually protect them from the risks?
So if you live in a high heartworm area, and we have a lot of clients do this in New Jersey, first of all, look at the seasonality. The heartworms can't spread when it's cold because one of the larval stages of the heartworm has to stay in the salivary glands of the mosquito for 2 weeks. And if the temperature drops below, they used to say 57 degrees, now they say 80 degrees. But if the temperature drops below, even if it's overnight in that 2 week period, that process of the larvae maturing stops. So they can't spread them. So right now in North Carolina, it's freezing cold. We're actually getting snow, which we're not supposed to do. I moved south so I would never have to deal with breaking ice on water troughs. Anyway, so, you know, why would I give a medication where it's frozen tundra for 6 months out of the year? So that's one thing. You can do it seasonally. For those who live in a high heartworm area, and you don't want to get preventative, you can do a heartworm test 2 to 3 to 4 times a year, because it takes 6 to 9 months for the test to become positive. So if my dog is bitten by a heartworm carrying mosquito in August, it's not going to show up on a positive test till the next spring.
Yeah.
And if the test comes up positive and you've been doing your negative tests, it's like, oh, whoo, now I've got a positive test. You can jump on it like that and you don't end up with damage to the heart, damage to the kidneys, damage to the liver. And we do have more natural ways of treating heartworms if you do get a positive test. So that's one thing. Second, a good immune system is not going to allow your dog to be parasitized or your cat. So a good immune system is the most important thing. So that means feeding them a fresh whole food diet, human grade. It means not over vaccinating them. It means not killing their immune system with repeated rounds of antibiotics or immune suppressing drugs like Apoquel and Cytopoint and all the new crap. Will Falconer, who's a holistic veterinarian in Texas, he has a book that, I can't remember the title, but it's Healthy Dogs Don't Get Heartworms or something like that. And it's true. If you have a good immune system, there's a great video, I think it's linked in one of our blogs on YouTube, that shows a microfilaria, which is a heartworm larvae in the bloodstream. And it shows a time lapse of the white blood cells coming in and literally just eating that thing and destroying it.
Yeah.
So if you have a healthy immune system, it says, hey, there's a foreign invader. We should go get rid of it. And if you have a healthy animal, they're going to be much less attractive to fleas and ticks. So we would have households of people with like 10 cats, and they bring them all in for their exam, and you'd have 9 cats with no fleas on them, 1 cat with a few fleas, and then you'd have the next cat that would have 1,000 fleas on it. Why does that cat have 1,000 fleas and the others don't? Oh, because that cat also happens to have kidney failure and it's 18 years old and it's got immune system dysfunction. And the fleas know that. Like, oh, we're going to go eat that one because that one's not going to fight us off. It doesn't have the energy to groom it. You know, the immune system isn't telling us to go away. We have great blogs on all the different natural preventatives. Garlic is amazing. It works really well. It needs to be fresh. It can't be garlic powder or garlic salt or, you know, chopped up in a jar. But fresh garlic works really well. Coconut oil is a natural repellent. And then, you know, all the different neem, yarrow, essential oils, herbs, lavender, so many things that can help. You can either add them to the food, and so it makes your animal smell and taste bad to fleas and ticks. So they're like, oh, I'm not going to go eat that one. I think I'll go find somebody else over here. It's really interesting. Like, we had a stray dog that came in our yard, and we're like, it was a coon hound. My husband's like, I'd love to have a coon hound. I'm like, all right, fine. This thing was loaded with fleas and ticks. I mean, thousands of ticks on this dog, thousands of fleas on the dog. Take him to the vet. He also has every intestinal parasite known to dog kind and heartworms. Well, clearly, you know, he was a rack of bones, and I'm sure he had, you know, Lyme, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, everything else as well. And it's like, well, of course, because his immune system stinks. He's clearly not on a good diet. And so all the parasites are like, this is a good one. So it really is about giving them good health as a base, and then allowing their immune system to do what it needs to do, and they're not going to taste good.
Yeah, because that's what the immune system is for, isn't it? It's for getting rid of the bad stuff. Whereas, you know, I think everybody seems to forget that it is more than capable, because it can shut down cancer and everything like that if it's got the right tools to be able to do it.
Exactly.
If parents actually wanted to find some information about the reported side effects about, you know, like the sudden death and the serious illnesses that have come from using these medications, Is there somewhere that they can go and have a look at that information?
DrJudyMorgan.com. We have a great blog on it. We also, if your dogs or cats have been given these products, we have great detox methods. If your dog is having seizures from these products, we have natural ways to help combat that. We had a little dog in Belgium who, first dose of NexGard, the dog started seizuring and ended up on 5 different seizure medications. The owner has been so amazing and did so much research, and he actually put together the protocol that he used for his dog. So a lot of it has come through there. He did it in conjunction with about 4 different holistic veterinarians. I was one of them. The dog is, I think, now on 1 seizure medication. He's like 3 years old. But rarely has seizures, still occasionally, but he's, you know, now like acts like a real dog and plays and has fun. And but what a journey. So we have tons of that information. I also have a book, natural parasite prevention, that's available through our website. It's an ebook download, or you can buy the physical copy. It's also on Amazon. So we have tons of resources on that, and I strongly advise anybody who is using the chemicals, wants to get away from them, do your research. We have tons of information on the side effects, because I've had to do consultations with so many owners whose pets have had just horrible, horrible problems. One severe dry eye. The dog could, you know, was fine before the drug, and 0 tears after that, and you know, huge journeys that these people go on trying to, and you know, part of the problem is maybe your pet hasn't had a reaction yet, but they might. And how guilty are you going to feel if you knew there might be a problem and gave it anyway? And that's part of the problem that we see, that people say, oh God, I feel so guilty. My vet didn't tell me there were any possible side effects. I had no clue. I didn't find out until after, when I went searching for why is my dog having seizures, or why, you know, why is my dog having this issue or that issue after going and getting this chemical. There are incredible social media groups, you know, does blah, blah, blah kill dogs? Does blah, blah, blah kill cats? You know, put it in your search engine. It's amazing what you'll find.
That's what happened with me though. Like when my, because I had 2 Boston Terriers, Boris and Betty. We got them at the same time. And Betty, we actually lost Betty at 2.5 years old to severe inflammatory brain disease, which wasn't picked up initially because she was deformed anyway. She didn't grow properly. And then she stopped eating and went, you know, lost loads of weight. And I kept taking them back to the vets, and they were saying it's just because she's in pain with the back legs because they're deformed and everything like that. And then it turns out she actually had, you know, a really bad neurological problem. So I kind of learned the hard way. It was horrific. And then Boris kind of started with the epilepsy, and that's kind of what sent me into the deep dive of, you know, what is going on, you know, in this space, and what can I do about it? And then, and that's what afterwards I kind of thought, you know, what is it me? I've actually been giving them that stuff. There's no awareness of the risks. And you do, you feel guilty, but you know, if you actually knew about the risks and then did it anyway, I can imagine that that guilt would be even more kind of magnified as well.
I mean, that's why education is so important. That's why I do what I do. And I see social media groups where people are saying, oh, my dog's having this problem, that problem, and this problem, and that problem. And the first question is, well, what are you feeding, and what vaccines and chemicals have they had recently? And it's just, there's not enough awareness, because I see so many people there. These are people that are on my holistic pages and saying, oh, I gave Simparica Trio yesterday. I'm like, how have you been on this social media page for a month or 2 months, a year, and you haven't figured out yet that this stuff is harmful?
I know it's bizarre, isn't it? It's like sometimes we can't see what's right in front of us as well, you know, even when, I don't know, it's just, maybe it's just how we think these days, until something actually clicks, and then, you know, we're kind of forced to deal with it. But yeah, because I mean, it would be kind of, because it is literally all you talk about. So it would be. Basically raising awareness. So it's about having that education though, isn't it? Because like knowledge actually is power, and the more you know about stuff, the more confident you become as well in the decisions that you make it. Because I always try to say to people, yeah, it might be scary at first, but if you do it now, and then, you know, even if you want to take like a monthly worm count test, just until you're confident that what you're doing is, you know, your dog's not going to get worms, and then kind of reduce it to like every 3 months or something like that. Do what you need to do to begin it, but then just think where you'll be in 12 months if you start now. But then again, you know, if you don't, then you've got another 12 months of chemical toxic load into your pet, which could then kind of like lead to other things. But okay, so my last question, if you could boil it down to just one piece of advice for pet parents when considering flea, tick and worm preventatives, let's call them, what would it be?
One piece of, like, first of all, just find, look for something natural. Eliminate as much as you can, as much as you feel comfortable with. You know, maybe it's, I'm going to take one thing out this month. Our pets do not need to be dewormed every month. Our pets do not need to be on a lot of chemicals. It's a huge problem, and it just causes so many issues for them. So if you have a pet who has allergies, inflammatory bowel disease, seizures, neurologic problems, try to get away from the chemicals as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Really take whatever package, and that's part of the problem. People don't get the packaging sometimes. It's just handed to their pet. You know, here's this chewable flea and tick and heartworm, whatever, while you're here. Always ask for the side effects. Always ask to see the packaging or the drug insert. Look it up on your, you know, we all carry tiny little computers in our pockets. So look it up on your tiny little computer and say, oh, look at that. Look at the side effects of this one. Maybe I should be concerned. And just remember that everything that's on there as a possible side effect, they really play it down. So it's much worse than what it says.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Judy. I hope anyone listening to this kind of podcast can kind of get some confidence from the things that you've said and that you've explained, because like for me personally, I do talk to a lot of pet parents, especially in the UK, who come and, you know, for nutritional advice with dogs who are having loads of problems, who also kind of miss the connections between the amount of chemicals they're having and you know, the basically just the timeline. But I mean, it's coming from someone like me who's kind of like small in the space, I can quite easily say, you know, this is just think about chemicals. But I think because your voice is so powerful, then hopefully, you know, what more people will kind of cotton on and join the non-chemical movement.
Here's another little tidbit, especially for people in the UK. They do a lot of testing, environmental testing over there. All of the rivers in the UK are contaminated with fipronil from use of the product on dogs. They tested the hair of children in France loaded with these chemicals. So you're not only poisoning your pets, you're poisoning yourselves when you're using these chemicals. We're poisoning the environment. And the isoxazolines are pretty deadly to fish. And so what are we doing to our rivers and our streams and our wildlife? It's not just about your individual pet. It's about your whole family, mm-hmm. your neighbors, and the environment that you live in. So consider all of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Judy. And thanks for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favorite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.